is the official podcast of UKIRK WCU, bringing you all the good news you can possibly handle. I'm Noah McEntee, campus pastor and director of UKIRK WCU and Hillside Grind Coffeehouse Ministry. Co-hosting with me today is Jennifer Drummond, a spiritual director, poetry aficionado, wife, mother, and longtime friend of mine. Jen, welcome. How's your quarantine treating you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. We've been doing some basic house things like painting a bedroom and, this is an exciting one. I've been transferring 75,000 photos from one hard drive to another.
It sounds thrilling.
You want to hear this. My daughter had blue hair and she had some special blue shampoo. And early on, I thought, this might be a good idea. And so I reached over and took the shampoo and it came out sort of like tar, really dark. And I thought, this still might be a good idea. Okay. And I went for it. It was not a good idea. Mm-mm. It was very blue and I didn't like it. So I had to spend about a week wearing ball caps and washing my hair every night.
And you took 75,000 pictures during this time?
No, those are all my old pictures that were on old hard drives that I had to upgrade and get to the new thing. And so
I see. How are you personally dealing with the lockdown? Are you isolating? Are you staying indoors? You've got husband, kids. Is everyone staying sane in your house?
Yes, I have husband, kids. He's working from home. We have some level of resources, inner resources and house resources to stay separate and stay sane and everybody kind of get their work done. You know, we've had a few days where it's been raining and everybody seems to be grouchy, but we've passed through those days and it's sunny now and, you know, we're more or less okay.
Mm. We have our garden going. So if things get too cramped up in the house, wife and I can escape to the garden and go out and fool with things out there, which is nice.
That is nice. But you have like animals out in the outside of your house, right?
We also have animals, yes. Rabbits, chickens, and the chicks. This year, we'd already decided to re-up the flock. And then found out that everyone decided they were going to have backyard chickens because they're all terrified there won't be chicken and or eggs at the grocery store. So they're all getting into it.
So are you like resident experts on chicks and chickens and rabbits?
Well, we live in Southern Appalachia, so everyone's resident expert on backyard livestock. We've actually had a lot of friends that we've been swapping various stay-at-home things. And I don't know how to describe it exactly other than to say, I have given out various SCOBYs for making kombucha. I have given out sourdough starters that we had when I split my sourdough starter. And I have someone coming later on to pick up worms because we do vermiculture and always have thousands upon thousands upon thousands of worms in a bin. And so I can just grab some of those and show them how to do it and set it up and they get going with that.
I see.
Yeah. Back to the coronavirus. How close is this coming to you? Do you know anyone with coronavirus? You don't need to give names and stuff, but are you affected by this in any way?
Well, there definitely have been a few people in our town who have had coronavirus, one or two officially that we know of, and several others that have sort of suspected, but they didn't need to be hospitalized or anything. But other than that, I don't know anybody who has it. I just know everybody who's stuck at home and talking about how it's affecting them.
Yeah. I have one or two folks that I know that know someone or have someone or have lost someone from coronavirus. A lot of the college students, they've all gone back home and they're in different places. And so they each have their own stories of where they are and how it's affecting them. The thing that's been affecting me more recently is just the routine stuff of life that doesn't work routine when there's coronavirus. Case in point, one of my parishioners this morning called and said that she was in the hospital, but I cannot go visit. I can't do anything other than a phone call. They won't let you in right now. So the normal kind of routines, and I know for her to be in the hospital is unnerving at this time. Mm-hmm. So things are definitely different because of the coronavirus.
Yeah. My brother-in-law and sister-in-law are both doctors, and my brother-in-law is an ER doctor and sister-in-law is a urologist. And so they're facing all of this every day and processing it. So far, they're both healthy.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Mm-hmm. Given the new situation that we're in, are there any new things that you've been doing because of the pandemic?
Yeah, I'm doing a couple things. Well, one of them is continuing and actually building on a daily prayer routine. So I pray the daily office in the morning, and the daily office is a set of prayers that I use, often use the Book of Common Prayer, being an Anglican, but I have a new book called The Divine Hours for Springtime, and it's easy to remember. It's by Phyllis Tickle. She's pretty amazing.
I'm familiar with that book.
Yep, it's good. It's good. So I've been using that and also been doing a devotional called Life-Giving Choices. What I really love about this book is this devotional is it's fairly short. So each chapter is like 3 pages and it's a word. And it's helpful for me to write down in my journal at the top things that I can choose and then just have this list. I even made it in rainbow colors so that I like looking at the page.
Nice.
Yes. So things like choose celebration, choose forgiveness, choose hello, meaning interact with people, choose kindness, all of these sorts of things. And so just as a sort of regular way to remind myself that there are some things within my control and I can choose to act certain ways or practice certain habits.
Yeah. That seems especially important right now when there's so much not in our control and so much that feels out of control. Mm-hmm. Things that remind us of what we can control. That seems like it's a good grounding practice.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's very good.
Yeah, good. Well, this is share your books you're reading as opposed to share your practices. I've also been reading a little bit. I got a little while ago Thomas Merton's The Sign of Jonas. Are you familiar with this?
Uh-uh. I mean, Thomas Merton, yes, but not that book.
Yeah, it's like journal entry style stuff, which means short entries and, you know, just journal diary kind of things, a paragraph or two. And I started reading it because I know that right now everyone says, oh, these are once in a lifetime circumstances that we're living through. The coronavirus is making everything so strange. We should all be journaling and documenting this. And I read Thomas Merton's stuff and I'm so grateful he documented so much of his life and the things that he was going through. But I also know that I'm not Thomas Merton, and I just feel like nobody ever will want to read my experiences with coronavirus. So I enjoy reading his journal.
Yeah.
But it has not encouraged me to do a journal on my own, rainbow color or otherwise. Mm-hmm. This time that we're living in is bringing a lot of interesting combinations. As I was saying earlier about parishioners in hospital that you can't go see, I've also heard from at least one of the college students in our ministry whose grandmother passed away recently, and dealing with grief in this time is especially hard for people. They're having a hard time figuring out how to grieve or how to mourn the loss of a loved one. I read an article earlier about students, they're grieving the loss of school and social networks and and all the regular patterns of life. There's a lot of grief floating around right now.
Mm-hmm. There sure is. It's especially hard because even in, quote, normal times, we as Americans, Western people, do not have healthy grieving patterns.
Right.
We don't like to see it in ourselves. We don't like to feel it. And so we try to rush it on out. We don't like to see it in other people. And so we just avoid people who are in grief. We don't know how to reach out. We don't know how to let ourselves be sad for a while. It's a little terrifying because, you know, sometimes you think, well, what if this is it? What if I'm just consumed by this grief? What if I start crying and I can't stop? What if it never goes away? What if it's just this, you know, cloud hanging over me?
Yeah. So instead we just package it all up into a velvet lined, highly polished box and bury it.
Yes.
Never having seen, touched, or experienced it.
Yes. Can I read something to you?
Yes, of course.
So there is this poet that I really like called Malcolm Gite. He's a priest in England and musician and poet. He is amazing.
Triple threat.
And, so here we go. Easter Dawn. This is number 15. He blesses every love which weeps and grieves. And now he blesses hers who stood and wept and would not be consoled or leave her love's last touching place, but watched as low light crept up from the east. A sound behind her stirs a scatter of bright birdsong through the air. She turns but cannot focus through her tears or recognize the gardener standing there. She hardly hears his gentle question, "Why? Why are you weeping?" or sees the play of light that brightens as she chokes out her reply. "They took my love away. My day is night." And then she hears her name. She hears love say the word that turns her night and ours to day.
I like that.
It's beautiful, right? I mean, it's so lovely to just have this woman. I mean, as we read it through, we'd learn that it's Mary, or we can surmise anyway.
Sounded like her.
Yeah, that she has experienced what some of us are going through now, that someone she loved has been taken away and she's all alone.
Mm-hmm.
And then she has this encounter with someone she thinks is the gardener, but it's really Jesus. And hearing him say her name, she hears love say the word that turns her night and ours today. It's like having that encounter in this moment of grief when you don't expect it, or, you know, it's not some big grand gesture. It's just beautiful.
Yeah, that's, I think there's a lot in there. Of course, the Easter story is the ultimate story of the Christian faith, and wrapped up in that is the whole of what we believe. Mm-hmm. There's elements of that great reversal where through death comes life, mm-hmm. and through Christ comes knowledge of God as he speaks to us and as he speaks to her, and brings that awareness and brings that reality right into her experience and her life. Let's keep talking about faith then, since we're already on that pathway. UKirk WCU is a campus ministry of the Presbyterian Church USA. We run the Coffee House Hillside Grind as our outreach and base of operations. And before this pandemic hit, we would gather on Mondays around lunchtime and do our Bible study, 11:30 a.m. People would come to the coffee house. I would always bring in sourdough bread and homemade soup, and we would have a little bit of a mealtime and then talk Bible. This past year, fall and spring semester, we've been looking at the book of Revelation. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a certain irony here that, there's a few ironies. One, I still get to bake and eat the sourdough bread at home, but I do it on a Zoom conference, so they all are watching me eat, and there is none that they have. But the other irony with that is everyone in the world right now is learning how to bake sourdough bread. And it's really funny that I've been bringing in sourdough bread for them weekly for how long? And then now that everyone's learning how to bake it, there they are at home with none of it. So there's some irony to that. But another irony is that we were looking at the book of Revelation, which I told them repeatedly is a book that encourages perseverance in the midst of hardship and suffering, and promises that God is in charge. God's plan will not be thwarted. And so we've been looking at some of that. We're almost done with the book now. The semester is wrapping up. We're almost done with Revelation 19. We just got to the part where the white rider appears on the battlefield, and his name is faithful and true. It says the name by which he is called is the word of God. It says, and on his robe and on his thigh, he has a name written, King of Kings and Lord of Lords. All of that is together in a matter of verses, but it also says he has a name that no one knows but himself. And I think about that with that poem that you just read, where Mary's experience is changed by the speaking of her name that mm-hmm. brings back life into what she thought was death and turns night into day. That's the experience of every Christian who comes to know Christ, is to know that the name that you always knew and the words that you always knew and the way people talk and the things that you've heard and seen and read, you've experienced it all. You know those names, but when you know Christ, you know him more fully and deeply, and you know him in a way that is not obviously known. Not so much that it's like a secret, but just that it is a revelation that unfolds the closer you get to Christ. Mm-hmm. I talked in the Bible study about how this is akin to in Exodus 6. It says that Yahweh revealed himself to Moses and said to him, "I am the Lord. I appeared to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob as God Almighty. But by my name, the Lord, I did not make myself known to them." And God's saying there, as much to Moses as he said before, The way that he reveals himself is more fully known as you understand who he is. You can say God and know that you talk about the infinite, almighty power of the universe. But to name Christ, to name Jesus in a personal way, and to hear him speak back to you is to understand more fully what even those words mean.
Yeah, and I think that this knowing is kind of an inner knowing. This is you know, the progression you talked about. It's a step towards your heart out of your head, if you will, use that analogy. And this is what happens in spiritual direction, right?
That sounds like spiritual direction talk right there.
It's totally the language, right? It's that when a person knows Christ, they have the Holy Spirit living within them. And that Holy Spirit speaks to us all in our inner beings. Mm-hmm. But for a variety of reasons, whether it's we're too busy and we don't slow down and take a moment to listen for that voice, whether we don't think that voice actually has anything to say to us or talks to people today, you know, God is distant, or the other, or the watchmaker who just sort of lets the universe unfold, or even, okay, Christ is with us, but really he's got bigger things to do than to speak words to me. There's a lot of reasons why we might not hear that voice. And the practice of spiritual direction is taking that time and listen with you for what that voice sounds like.
Sounds like this is a counseling for the soul kind of.
Yeah, it's very similar to counseling, except for problem solving and diagnoses and that sort of things. The person may come with questions, but there's no answers that a director would give. It would be lots of questions, lots of noticing, lots of silence. This is all inner work that you have to make room for. God, you know, you slow down and open up, and then God can have your attention and say, okay, here's the things that I want to tell you, or here's what's true about you. Here's what's true about me. Here's what's going on, whatever. And the reality is most of us don't take the discipline or the time or have the space in our life for God, for us to hear God in that way. Because sometimes it's like you're sitting and, quote, nothing happens. But you have made space and you have watered those seeds. And if the inner life is hidden with Christ, like a bulb in the garden that needs time and covering and darkness to germinate and turn into the next living thing, that's what spiritual direction does. That's what any of these practices that we do as Christians allows for. It allows for God to make himself known to us. And that making himself known to us in that inner being is what happened to Mary there. It's what happens to Christians when they turn to Christ. It's what transforms us from glory to glory, you know, makes us more like Christ and draws him to himself.
One of my students, she plays a video game. It's Farm something or Farm Lifeville thing, game, whatever it's called. It's a farming game, but you have to like log in order to make the farming things work. So like you log in and you play the game, when you put the seeds in the ground, you do your stuff, and then you cut some weeds down and you cut a tree down and you build a fence and whatever else. But then if you quit, the game stops. You got to come back into it in order to like start the next day and do the next thing. Like you got to log those hours for things to happen. So even though you've planted stuff, I mean, if I plant things in my garden right now, if I don't go back out there again ever, they'll grow. I mean, weeds will grow. They'll grow. But in this game, if you're not there tending and if you're not logging those game hours, nothing happens. And it sounds like spiritual direction has a little bit of that element to it, that you need to set aside the time to be there and let things grow and develop. And that doesn't happen just in the background of your life. Like you start it and then, you know, Ronco that thing and set it and forget it. You're going to have to be there and tend to it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great example.
So given that you do some spiritual direction and you've talked about making time, we're all in coronavirus lockdown right now. We have an abundance of time on our hands. How do we make good use of that? If you had one thing to tell people in this time of isolation and lockdown where there is so much time, what would you tell them to do? What's something they can get going right now?
I would say this is an excellent opportunity to practice some solitude and silence.
Tell me how to do that.
Well, One thing to note is that, you know, language is changing seemingly day to day with what we're supposed to do and how things are labeled. And, you know, we've heard the term social distancing, and that is being renamed to physical distancing, or there's some other terminology. But I've heard someone else say, let's rethink that and say, this is going to be a time of compassionate retreat. And that changes it from something that's being forced upon us, again, to something that we're choosing to do. So we can say, I'm going to choose to stay home or minimize my activities for the sake of the other. But not only I'm just going to stay home, I'm not going to stay home and paint my nails and you know, turn my hair blue and make chocolate chip cookies and whatever. I'm going to try to set aside a little time each day to sit by myself with God. And so, you know, if this is something that you have never done, then you should start with like 2 minutes and say, all right, I'm going to go in a quiet place. You know, if you're alone in your house, you'll have plenty of opportunity for this, and you'll still need to make it an intentional habit.
What if you're not alone? Can you still do it?
Yes. If you're not alone, I trust that you could still find a room where you can shut the door and actually be by yourself.
That room also has a bath and toilet in it.
At the very least, ask the people that you're with to say, can I please have 5 minutes and don't interrupt me? I'm doing something important. Okay. Uh-huh. So you sit there quietly. One way to think about it is to start with thinking about your breath and just practice breathing in and out and being quiet. For many of us, this is very hard. Sometimes for personalities, but for most of us, because of habit, we don't ever just sit quietly. We're talking, we're looking at our computers, we're looking at our phones, we're, you know, distracted by everything around us. Mm-hmm. So getting to a secluded place where you can shut the door and say, I'm going to even close my eyes and try to sit here for 2 minutes and just have quiet. What you'll notice is that it's very hard, but you'll get better at it. And once you can get better at sitting quietly and not having the outside stuff distract you, what you will quickly notice is that you have a lot of internal noise. We are so antsy because now we have to face all the internal chatter, the thoughts and the things that we're feeling and whatever stuff that we would rather just wrap up in a nice velvet box and bury it is kind of there. We have to look at it and be with it.
Let's talk more about that next time. Interior chatter.
The interior chatter. I feel like that's a great title.
So do you have any final thoughts? We'll come back in a future episode, perhaps, to more discussion about the interior chatter. Any final thoughts that you want to convey to us or anyone else?
It's a national crisis. Things are not as they were. People are disoriented. Routines are upended, and that is a very real opportunity to assess both at large, like how are we doing things in America? Things are not working. Okay, let's look at those. But more relevantly, every person has the opportunity to assess themselves. Like, is my life going the way I want it to? Are things, am I happy with the way that that I'm living, that things are around me? And indeed, the opportunity is to do a lot of self-reflection. So my encouragement would be take that opportunity, slow down, and allow some space for all of the feelings that you have, you know, acknowledging that you're grieving the loss of some things, that you have uncertainty in your life, whatever the, you know, you are angry or frustrated or fill in the blank with whatever you are actually feeling. And acknowledge that there's some things you can control. There's some things you can choose to do. There are patterns that you can put into place, which will be very beneficial and very grounding and allow you to sort of approach that inner life in a way that may be transformative, that maybe we wouldn't have had if things hadn't ground to a halt. So take advantage of that is my advice.
Yeah. Sounds good. Sounds very good. Let's leave it there for this week. And until next week, keep the faith, everybody. Stay positive, trust in the Lord, and do good. The music that you're listening to is from my friends, Steve and Ezra, who formed a funky little band called The Histamines. Find their music online at Bandcamp.